Hello, Mzansi and the world beyond. Welcome to Poets Hub SA, a vibrant podcast that profiles young South African poets and their work. This podcast is powered by the National Poet Laureate Hub with an aim to promote the diverse culture of our country and nation through poetry and other art forms. I am your host, Busisiwe Mahlangu. As always, we open the show with South African classics. In South African classics, we feature writers that have shaped poetry and literature in the country. These are our elders in writing, and it is only right that we begin each episode paying homage to them and their work. Today, I'll read a poem by Ubaba Don Matera, a renowned poet and author. The poem is titled The Poet Must Die, and it was written for anti-apartheid poets James Matthews and Gladys Thomas after their poems were executed and banned. This is how the poem goes. The poet must die, for her murmuring threatens their survival. Her breath could start the revolution. She must be destroyed. Burn her. Send her to the island. Call the firing squad, but remember to wipe her blood from the wall. Then destroy the wall. Crush the house, kill the neighbors if their lives are to survive. The poet must die. I find this poem very gut-wrenching, and it reminds me of how powerful poetry is. The poem is not only brilliant and timely, but it also introduces our theme perfectly, freedom. What freedom means and what freedom is. Today on the line, we have two wonderful poets who'll be exploring the theme freedom with us. We have the inspiring Musa Masombuga, poet and author of Elegies and Eulogies, which features an introduction by our very own National Poet Laureate, Dr. Mongano Wali Serote. Hey Musa, how are you?
Hi Wusi, thank you for having me. I'm very well, and how are you there?
I'm good. Where are you connecting from today?
I'm connecting from Yuba.
The city. You know, I haven't been in Yuba in so long. Now I'm thinking of all the things I miss. The food, especially, of Yuba. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
We also have the amazing Raquel, an intersectional feminist, activist, volunteer, and poet from Johannesburg, South Africa. She says that she writes under the alias The Bushy Poet. Can't wait to hear the story behind that. And nod to her identity as a colored woman and the usual state of her hair. So we got the explanation already. Her writing style varies, but she mostly writes in rhyme and spoken word. Welcome to the show, Raquel. How are you?
Hey, Pussy, I'm good, thanks, and you? I'm glad that you asked about the alias. Sometimes it just feels more comfortable writing not as yourself, but as an extension of yourself. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. And where are you connecting from?
I'm connecting from Observatory, Johannesburg.
Oh, that is lovely. Wow. I love how in the time of like the internet, we can have a conversation, even though we are scattered all over the country. I am currently connecting from Mamelodi, my hometown. So I'm so happy we are having this conversation, even though
yes,
we are in different parts of the country.
It's beautiful. It's really nice. I mean, it's hard during lockdown, but it is great that throughout this pandemic we can connect with people that maybe we wouldn't have connected otherwise.
I would like to know, Raquel, what inspires you to write and why?
Oh, what inspires me to write? I guess when I write, I'm able to sort of take my thoughts and make it more clear to myself. I find that at times, you know, there's so much going on, and I feel like we are so stimulated, you know, because we live in the age of the internet. There's so much information, so much to think about, so much to do, that it's hard to sort of understand where you're at. and understand what it is that you are really thinking of or trying to get through. So for me, writing is sort of a way to put all my thoughts down and to look at them and reflect on them in a more clear manner. But also just to make my voice a bit louder. I feel like it's harder to just speak about things, but it's easier to write about them.
I love that. Sometimes it's harder to think about things, but it's much easier to write about things. Musa, what's your inspiration?
For me, I am inspired. Actually, I can't say inspired. I would say I'm triggered by this social ailment, you know. And that's where I draw my inspiration from. That's where most of my writings come from. This fatherlessness and also other social ailments of poverty and situations that we find ourselves in. So for me, writing is a form of reflecting and also putting myself in those shoes and, you know, to say to the world that I am with you, you are not alone. And also writing for me helps me to meditate and relax my mind rather. So it allows me to travel and touch souls, you know. So yeah.
Wow, I am inspired by Stella Nyanzi. She's an Ugandan poet. I'm inspired by many writers, actually. But she's an Ugandan poet, and she's been imprisoned for her poem that she wrote against the dictatorship government and president in her country. I'm inspired by how she did not allow to be silenced, but wrote and completed a poetry book titled No Roses from My Mouth while in prison. So I always think of that moment, especially when I find myself trying to figure out, like trying to write about a subject, but I feel silenced, or I feel like it's difficult, or I feel like I don't have the power or the bravery I need to write about this kind of topic or whatever. And I always look back and I say, okay, yeah, you're stronger than that. Your words can bring down walls, and they are important, and there is a place for that, in such a way that even a writer who was like imprisoned for her work did not stop writing. Like, they couldn't take the pen away from her, like, even though they were denying her freedom. I love when you say, Musa, that you're triggered by like the issues in society instead of being inspired by them, because most of the time as writers, we write of the social ills around us, of what's going wrong around us. And it's not like we are like choosing to say, oh, you know what, let me go through a heartbreak, or let me see something devastated so that I can write. But it's just that these things are already around us. I would like to know, Musa, what does freedom mean to you?
Okay, freedom for me would mean, you know, being able to express myself and also not being given a framework. If you look at South Africa as a whole, there are certain frameworks in which you as a poet or as a citizen, you have to channel your thoughts. So I wouldn't want to live in a world where my thoughts are dictated by a constitution per se or any conduct. So I want to live in a world where I'm free from all I can call them cages, you know, cages of classification, you know, the freedom of speech. I want to have the freedom of choice, the freedom of religion, and the freedom of being us, you know, in our individual being, and also being part of a society that is not divided by these labels. So for me, freedom would then mean that we are able to be ourselves and also be able to contribute to the society.
The freedom to be ourselves and to contribute to the society. Raquel, how would you define being free?
Well, I feel like I think about this question a lot, and I think I've come to the conclusion that freedom is so multifaceted, because there are ways to be free. But there are, just because you have freedom in one thing doesn't mean you have sort of freedom in everything, if that makes sense. Like if we take, feel like if we take the fact that we are now, as a country, as South Africans, we are now free of like the chains of apartheid, so to speak, you know, quote unquote. But then you still have, you know, the issue of gender-based violence. So it's like as a country, we're not completely free from all of the issues. We've just made certain steps towards freedom. So I think freedom is more of this journey. Like Musa said, to like be who you are and to like be able to have the space to speak and to act freely. But also, I think freedom is more about the journey and the steps we take to sort of the greater freedom of everyone. But I don't think freedom will ever be reached. I think it is more of like the walk along the way. Yeah. I don't know. Freedom is a complex thing.
I understand you. Like you can have like freedom to move around, but not have the means to move around or not feel safe in the spaces that you move around. Not because someone said you can't move here.
Yes, but exactly. Then,
yeah. But then that, there's still like some way, like in some ways that you're reminded that you don't completely belong here or you can't access the space because you don't have the resources or you don't have 1, 2, 3. So I really understand what you mean. And I've never thought of it like that. You know, every time we're speaking about freedom, especially around the times of, let's say, maybe a huge political event, it's around June 16 or whatnot, we are like, yeah, our heroes fought for this time, we are free and whatnot. But then when we look at our education system, it hasn't changed that much. There's still like difficulty accessing higher education, even like primary and high school education, and there's still like a difficulty to access resources, even though you're in school, to be able to be protected and to be safe. So I really love like that perspective, because I've never thought of it much like that. Like you can have one freedom and not have the other freedom, even though they are very similar. Like you can learn in your home language at school, but you can't afford school, or you can't walk, like get to school, or yeah. So thank you so much, Raquel, for that. So we have reached this part where the poets share their poetry. I don't want to lie, I love this part. I enjoy listening to poets read their own poems in their own voice, to feel where the pauses are and to feel where the rush is and to just hear the work in their own voices. So yeah, this is such an exciting section for me. Musa, are you ready to share your piece?
Yes, I'm ready. You see?
You can take it away.
All right. So this is titled Poem 7 of 12. So there were 12 poems which did not have titles. So instead I gave them numbers. The poem starts, "I have asked pain why she has decided to foster us. She said, death has bad parenting skills. He is careless, selfish, and abusive. I do not want you to go through what I've been, she said. Pain says to me, I'm not perfect. I try and adjust to people's differences, and I'm somehow understanding. Please, give me a try. I then asked Death what he has to say about the allegations. He said pain is such a nagging child, persistent and annoying too. My patience runs out quick. I read of what bothers me, he said. From then, I decided to give pain some chance. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh my God, giving your poems numbers. I've never thought of that. I always struggle with titles. is that how it happened?
Yeah, it happens. So you find that you have a poem, but then you don't have the title. You know, sometimes the muse can just give you a poem and not the title.
Yeah, and the poem is working. It's complete. You just need a title, and I love that it's just called Seven.
Thank you.
In the poem, you have death, parenting pain, and then pain is there being the child in the playground, protecting everyone from the wrath of her parents. Like, how did you come to that, you know, that concept?
Okay, so this poem, it's actually addressing what we are dealing with as a society. It also touches on GBV and also how we as the 21st century youth, we are dressed, or should I say we are drowning in depression. So we, in as much as we have learned to embrace pain and be comfortable in, nobody ever wants to die. So you notice pain is a woman and death is a man. And this goes back to GBV, where women have this character in them to withstand all the challenges. But men can't do that. Men can also raise children. If a man is disturbed, a man would rather take his own life, but he would start all by taking the lives of others first, not his own. So he's a coward, doesn't want to die alone. And when we look at women as pain, we look at them from being patient, you know, being patient with us. And also, like you say, like it says, pain says to me, I'm not perfect. I try and adjust to people's differences, and I'm somehow understanding. In as much as you go through pain, pain comes in drips and drabs. You might, and it's also like they say, healing is not instant or spontaneous. So pain as well is also not instant. You know, it comes, it goes. But with death, it comes and then you are gone forever. So I'm relating this to how we have managed to, I can say we have adjusted to our problems such that we feel safer in them. And we don't want to, you know, end up taking radical decisions, if I may say. So, yeah.
That's an interesting take. That's a really interesting take. So, in your view, do you think, like, we should be more like pain? Or is there another, like, safer, healthier alternative to, like, the people we can aspire to be? I don't know if aspire is the right word.
I think we as black people, we are not investing in our emotional health, and this is costing us a lot, because now you look at the sarcasm that comes with you opening up to your family or friends to say, actually, I am going through this and this and this. How do I deal with it? And you get the sarcasm that comes with iphela nini depression yakho sizodlalapha endlini. Do you understand? So we are scared. And also, not also being scared alone, but also our parents themselves, they are emotionally wrecked because they also did not know how to deal with this problems that they find themselves in, the situations they find themselves in. So we as black people, we have embraced bottling things in such that they end up damaging us. And we also, we become snakes. We are born with the venom. You understand? So I would say that we also need to be open, create safer spaces, you know, be emotionally intelligent and understand that material things, they are not the only things that a person needs. You know, you need to be emotionally free and emotionally intelligent and emotionally stable. It also goes back to affordability. You know, how would you pay for 2,000 rand for a therapist whereas there's no food in the house, you know? So I think it also comes back to such challenges. So, yeah, I think we need spaces where we are able to talk and our parents allow us to be open with them and then find solutions.
Yeah, you're definitely right. Mental health is something that is often overlooked in our communities, like in our black communities. And I feel like maybe it's also because, you know, when you grow up in, like, maybe in poverty or in a disadvantaged background, there isn't really time to look at other factors of life. You have to be productive, even if that productivity is not bringing in any money, but you have to be productive. You have to keep pushing and you have to keep working. And, you know, like this whole less hustle and all of that. Sometimes there isn't, besides the resources, there isn't even time to do like basic self check in with ourselves, to sit with ourselves and see like, oh, every time this thing happens in my life, I always react with anger, or every time this thing happens, because we are always in this wheel of productivity, like we must always be productive, or else like we are lazy, or else what, like the situation that's happening in our life, the disadvantages in our lives are here because we chose them. But yeah, it's a very tricky situation when it comes to mental health, the conversations around them. Okay, we have the conversations, and then what about the resources? But can you share any of like very basic practices that you do yourself that help you cope with life?
Okay, so in our school, we've got a system where we call it a reflective circle. So we would sit with learners or as teachers ourselves, and then we then, it's a safer space. You either vent or you either bring your matter to the table, and then we dissect your matter and try to find out if we can't offer solutions. Also, I think as people, in as much as we are social, but we do have those people in our corner that we trust so much that we can talk to. I would say, I would advise people not to keep quiet and think that, especially men believe that no, a man cannot cry. A man cannot, you know, be an emotional wreck. A man, so that's why, one little mistake triggers all other things, because you are failing to acknowledge that you are going through this because of the stigma that comes with indoda ikhali. You know, a man can't do this, a man can't do that. So I think once we rid of that mentality, and then we become open with ourselves, and we take effort, you know, to introspect our lives in our busy and productive days. You know, we find a day where you sit down and then seek help, you know, because it will only damage you than it will help you.
Thank you so much, Musa, and for sharing the nuggets of how to deal, and sharing the poem as well. Raquel has also prepared a lovely poem for us, and you must hear it before I make any comments. You must just hear it yourself, Raquel.
All right.
Before I say my poem, I just like to say, Musa, that poem was beautiful. The line "Pain says to me, I'm not perfect." It's one of those lines that you hear and will stick in your head, especially like when you realize that pain is painful, but there's also something about it that I don't know, that it's almost like a safety net. It teaches you. But anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this poem that I'm about to share with you is called Stagnation. I guess this is one of those poems where I share with people and people will tell me what they think, because I feel like at times it takes on different meanings, especially for me. But yeah, Stagnation. The tap would not turn, the valve could not open, and in the puddle below, my gray water seemed golden. I found it reflected a stagnated hope that shattered like glass at the throwing of stones. I swallowed the nothing that itched at my throat. I drank in the dust on the surface afloat, and still in the puddle, a reflection of hope. For insurance of survival, I needed to cope. The tap, it was rusted, the paint peeled away, the metallic circumference rimmed with decay. Drip, drip, two drops a day, they fell on my tongue before melting away. The drops kept me nourished but unsettled the need. It drowned my wanting and revived my greed. I hungered for more, the tap would not concede, so I moved away before the vultures could feed. I travel in circles, mimicking time. In the west it has rest, in the east it gives rise. I turn on my back and cover my eyes, my mind in stagnation, my thoughts in the skies. I awaken the puddle. My hair is all wet. I travel in circles. How could I forget? The tap is my face, but still does not open. My hope has stagnated. My soul has been broken. So still I lay, my thoughts in a puddle, my head in gray water, a stagnated puddle. Drip, drip, 2 drops a day. I move aside and let them fall on the rubble. Time went full circle from sky to the ground. I continue to lay, not making a sound. Drip, drop, the puddle now ripples, a body of water before stagnated cripple. Time shines above, evaporating my soul, and down below, the gray water turns gold. It glistens with hope. Now I finally know you need to water a puddle if you want it to flow. Thank you.
Wow. Yo. You know, the minute I read your poem, I was actually so surprised how your poem and Musa's poem were actually in conversation. But I did not even know if any of you guys read each other's poem for the podcast. I loved how, like, Musa is like, yeah, okay, he has a conversation between pain and death. And then you come and say and explain, like, go deep into how the pain feels, how being in one place feels, like that feeling of being stuck, but like yearning for the hope. You say that people always interpret this poem differently, but I would like to know, how do you interpret it?
First of all, thank you. At different times, I feel as if I interpret it differently. While I was reading it right now, I had the thought that was sort of, you know, what feeds us also keeps us captive. You know, like when you're stagnant, you know, stagnation for me right now, it's sort of like, I feel like this is a very, you know, integral time in our history, but it's also a time of deep, deep stagnation because we're literally in a pandemic. We are literally behind masks. We cannot move as freely. We cannot do things. We don't have the same freedoms as we usually have. And so, you know, for myself right now, I feel particularly stagnant because there's, you know, a lack of jobs, a lack of motivation, there's listlessness. So this poem for me right now, it's sort of like a message of hope in the stagnation. Like, you feel as if you're just sitting and doing nothing and waiting for, you know, the storm to pass. But with that waiting, even though you feel as if you're becoming stagnant, it's also about patience, you know. Even though the water isn't flowing right now, you can't allow for your hope to disappear, you know, because at some point you need to remember that, like, maybe the rain will come and that stagnant water will flow if you allow it to flow, if you don't sort of try and keep it away, you know, keep it safe, and just allow the rest of the water to flow into it. And so, yeah, I guess it's about hope for me.
Yeah, it's a very hopeful piece. Looking at, like, you know, somehow, sometimes to reach people, to give them the light, you have to go to the dark places in you and share how you've, like, looked for the light and how you've kept the little light coming in, and over time it became like this huge spark, and over time it became like it lit up the whole room. And that's how I feel when I was listening to you read the poem. It's like, oh, like, okay, maybe the intention might not have been like, let me go to the dark places so I can connect with people. But to have, like, to be able to feel that, oh, like, this is from the dark places and I've been in the dark places, and you feel like this hope slowly creeping in through the poem, and the rhythm as well. Like, the rhythm is so beautiful and so comforting. I fell in love with the way the rhythm worked with the words. I mean, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for listening to it. Wow. And it's also like, that's what I love about this poem is I feel like for me, I kind of just wanted to paint a picture, but everyone sees it differently, you know, and that's what it's all about, you know, is because for me, the picture is ever changing whenever I read this poem. So it's nice to hear other people, what they feel when they listen to it, what they, you know, yeah. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I wish more like work that is current gets taught in schools as well. Musa, as an educator, how do you think that modern current poetry written by young writers specifically can be introduced to schools?
I think we then first need to change the system. I want to go back to what you said about the education system. So you find that the person who selects these poems is not an educator, or is not a writer. Or if he is the writer, the person might be there for a very long time. So when they select such works, they always want the classics instead of the contemporary ones, you know. So that is the challenge that we are battling with. And in most cases, we get questions like, why would you want to go for Ubusi Mahlangu? How are we going to afford? Why can't you go with what is in the books? You understand? So it's a challenge that we are battling with. In as much as they say to us, teachers, you can be creative and get things out there, but then don't you think you are extorting an artist here? I want the education sector to reach a point where they say, okay, fine, yes, you can go and source a poem and then bring it and then seek permission from the poet, and then we will compensate as the department, you know, because sometimes, not even sometimes, they don't at all. If I were to say, okay, I feel like I want to use this poem in class, and they would say to me, okay, it's fine, you may use it. It's like, but then what about compensation too? And the poet for acknowledging acknowledging the poet for this great work of art, they said, no, that is on you, because you are the one who went to source the poem. We gave you a list of poems which you can use. You understand? So this is the struggle that we are dealing with.
So there isn't like a space where, or a platform where writers can be like, okay, here I'm submitting my work to be considered, to be taught in schools. There isn't that kind of channel that exists currently.
The channel that I've seen existing is with the education department. They always try to call for submission of books yearly for school libraries. But at the same time, we are asking them to say, don't only consider these books for school libraries, because in South Africa, how many schools have libraries? You go to the villages, a school doesn't have a library, right? And there's a high chance that the school might have a library and have books, but then learners, they are not motivated to read. And also teachers, they don't encourage learners to read, right? So we were asking them to say, yes, don't stop supporting young writers, but at the same time, carefully, when you do your reviews, because normally poetry we publish in anthologies, because they're saying it will be pointless for us to approve a book, a poetry book by one author, because now it will feel like the voice is the same throughout. So we want an anthology so that we get different voices. So we are asking them to say, when you compile such anthologies, please ask publishers to go for young writers so that we get the contemporary voices, the new voices, current issues, right? So yeah, that's the least we could do. But other than that, there is support whereby the department does purchase books from young writers and then procures them into the school libraries. But then the question is, how do we then get learners to read these books, whereas you as a teacher, you don't even know these young poets?
I feel like including the poems as part of the syllabus would really help, like, would make the work to be read and studied. Because, you know, with the culture of literature, sometimes you'll find that a poet's work become more important once they pass away. When they are still alive, just the poet is struggling, the writer is struggling, and the minute they pass away, their work sort of, like, reaches another level where it's recognized all over. It's like like, there has to be that like, the death has to happen, and then now you can be taught in schools. But there's also been, like, nice changes that I've been seeing, but in the university level, and I would like to also see that transformation happening in the lower grades as well, where,
correct,
like, universities will prescribe a whole entire book, like Kolega Putuma and Jolene Phillips. They are also studying Jolene Phillips in, I think it's UWC, and Kolega Putuma in Stellenbosch. And, like, there is sort of that change sort of happening in the university level, and to be able to see that kind of work, I believe there will be a huge impact. Imagine studying a poet in grade 9, and you can go home and you can find this poet on Facebook, and you can have actual conversation with this writer. Where else, I really, really respect the classics, and they have to be taught. They are part of, we cannot remove ourselves from the classics, but we can also introduce writing that is present and current as well at the same time. So I imagine, like, being in grade 9 and you have, you're reading this writer and you can have actual conversations with the writer. You can find them on social media. You can send them messages or you can follow their journey. I feel like there would be, like, a generation of writers coming from that experience alone.
True. It will be inspirational for the learners. And also, in respecting the classics, what we could do, we could juxtapose. We could take a classical poem and then take the contemporary poem and say, okay, can you then see the difference, or can you see the similarities? You see, so obviously we're not saying that they should read away classics, but we are saying, can they juxtapose? Can they merge young writers into these classics? Because at the end of the day, writers, they shape the nation.
Okay, yeah, definitely. Yeah, but transformation, I hope it's happening in some way. You know, we need change. We really need change in the arts. Raquel, I would like to ask you, like, what kind of change do you wish to see in the arts in South Africa? Okay, it seems...
Okay, sorry. Hi.
I thought it was you.
What change? So I get that, you know, the world is a lot smaller now, and so there's a lot of places where we draw inspiration from, but I find that when it comes to the art scene in South Africa, we move away from sort of our own identity and try to adopt the identity of, you know, more the Western nations, you know, so, like, there's the Americanization of everything, especially when it comes to music. And I feel like music and poetry are one and the same, you know. Well, good music for me will have good writing, good lyricism. But the personas that people adopt when it comes to, you know, developing maybe their, yeah, just the way people, you know, the identity that they adopt in their arts is oftentimes it's not from, like, a South African standpoint. The things we speak about are things that are more commercialized. Sorry?
I'm sorry, Raquel. I feel like I cut you while you're still speaking.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, the connection's a bit bad. But yeah, I just feel like within the art scene, I do hope that we move away from sort of adopting other cultures into, you know, it's a good thing that we are, we draw inspiration from different places, but to sort of stop hiding under the facade, the Western facade, trying to be more trying to be more like people who are from, you know, America or from Britain. And I feel like we should just be more like ourselves, show our own art without drawing influences from that or trying to sell things for clout. But also I do wish also within the art industry there were more spaces for younger people. I feel like our art scene here, it's heavily capitalized, and so you kind of, there's no space for like amateurs or like people who aren't already in the industry to sort of break into the industry, because the industry is such a secluded space and such a
I hear you. Like, we have to embrace ourselves, like our identity more without trying to relate it to other countries, and to have for the freestyle, right? Rule number one, you have to freestyle a poem responding to the word, and I'll give you this word after I'm done telling you the rules. Rule number two, you are allowed to co-create with each other. So where Raquel stops, Musa, you can take it away. Where Musa stops, Raquel, you can run with it. Rule number three, and the most important rule of them all, have fun. Just have fun. Let that be the thing in your head, to have fun, and let whatever comes to mind, just verbalize it. Are we all clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. But Lucy, your connection is quite bad.
Really? Oh, my word. Okay, rule number one, you freestyle a poem. You're responding to the word. Let me tell you the word, actually. The word is emancipation. So you'll be responding to the word emancipation. Rule number two, you are allowed to co-create with each other. So when Musa stops, Raquel, you can run with it. When Raquel stops, Musa, you can jump in. Ganjalo, as many times as you want, as you guys want to keep going. And rule number three, just have fun. That is rule number three. It's simple. Just have fun. So your word is emancipation. So I'm just going to keep quiet now and listen until someone wants to go first.
Yo, I don't like this game. Yo.
You might surprise yourself.
We hate surprises.
Guys, the word is emancipation.
Yo, Musa, yo. You wanna hop on that first, or?
Hey, this now will sound like a draft or something. Okay, so, I want to emancipate my scars into happiness. I want my scars to pick themselves up and form an image that. An image, you see, my mind is telling me. I want my scars to pick themselves up and form an image that lives deep in my gut before pain came and kidnapped me into a place where darkness only means living. I'm not sure if I'm making sense. I want us to emancipate from depression into, I think, being depressed by the system and all the chains of the social ills. I feel like we are imprisoned, and every word we say might be used against us. I want our words to be bullets and free us from this. Rafael, can you please?
I want to emancipate myself from this pain that has occupied itself in my soul. I need to take control. Take control of where I'm going, because I feel like there's restrictions on me. I need to be set free. As I'm walking on this journey, I look up and see the sky. And I know that beauty is beholden to the eye that is looking upon. But I feel like right now I'm being blinded by the light, and I don't know, something doesn't feel right. I feel as if I need emancipation. I need to be set free. Emancipate me.
Yo, I don't like this game.
A whole freestyle.
You guys did it. You did it.
Yeah.
How was that?
I.
How was that?
For me, I think I kept on. I know, like you know, those moments when you have something in mind, but you don't know how to say it. You know, I need time to process it. You know, and everything is coming all at once. You know, so yo.
Yeah, there's so many words that want to rush, and it's like, which one do I choose right now? What do I want to say? I don't know.
You know, I like describing it as like that feeling, you know, when you're running downhill or you're running down a mountain and your feet keep going faster and faster, not because you choose to. Like, that's how I feel. Mm. Like, my thoughts are going fast and my tongue is like coming out slow, and the words are just, you know, that feeling.
Your tongue.
Yes.
Well, see, love how you put it in such a clear picture. Like, that makes so much sense. Yes, that's exactly what it is.
Wow. But it's such a great experience, and so many good things came from your freestyle. Like, emancipate scars into happiness. Emancipate myself from pain, take control of where she is going, emancipate from depression, being depressed by the system. Guys, so many things came out. You must listen to this podcast and then go back and circle all the nice things you came up with and turn them into a poem. I'm telling you.
I will try that, but I don't even know what I was saying.
That's probably how it feels.
Oh my
gosh. Oh, this was so fun. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yes.
That was nice. I love how it you know, just that word, that it brought forth like so many different thoughts from Musa took it in one direction and I took, but it's so nice how just there's a cue and it brings forth like different thoughts. I love that. Words are incredible.
Definitely. It's like free writing, but instead you're just doing it with your tongue. Yeah. Thank you so much, Raquel, and thank you, Musa, for such a wholesome conversation. It's been an honor and so much fun chilling with you, talking up to you. I enjoyed every moment. Thank you for opening yourselves up and sharing your work with us. I appreciate you guys, and I cannot wait to see more work from you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having us, Missy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, this was incredible.
Thank you, Raquel. Thank you. And thank you to the listeners for tuning in. Thank you for being part of the Poets Hub community. As you know, there's always another episode that you can catch. Thank you so much.